Ukraine claims it successfully struck a Russian fighter jet far beyond the border.
This comes along with the information that Ukraine is getting more weapons from its allies, and also that Ukraine is actually getting agreement on using these weapons on the territory of Russia.
Plus, more than 90 countries confirm they will attend a Ukraine peace summit next weekend in Switzerland.
The success of the summit and global presence of this event will be a clear signal that the world does not support the war and wants peace.
And later in the program, 1 year after the collapse of Ukraine's Kakhovka Dam, the impacts continue to be felt. Today is Monday, June 10th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Lori London. Vice President Kamala Harris and White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan will represent the United States and take part in next weekend's Ukraine Peace Summit in Switzerland. At least 90 countries and organizations have confirmed they will attend.
The success of the summit and global presence of this event will be a clear signal that the world does not support the war and wants peace. The summit is aimed to give a platform to discuss various ideas to achieve a comprehensive, just, and lasting peace, and to give a high-level political start to prepare a joint peace framework which should restore peace for Ukraine, for Europe, and for the world.
Sergei Kislytska, permanent representative to the United Nations Ukraine. Switzerland says Russia was not invited to participate in the summit because it dismissed the talks as a waste of time, but it did stress Russia must be a part of the peace process. The summit comes at a critical time for Ukraine as the civilian toll from Russian attacks continue to mount.
Shopping centers, homes, educational establishments, shops, office buildings, parks and public transport have all been struck in recent weeks. At least 18,100 people in the Kharkiv region have been newly displaced, according to estimates by the International Organization for Migration.
Joyce Mpsuya is the Assistant Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs with the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. She says few parts of the country have been spared from the hostilities, but that the escalation in fighting in the Kharkiv region has had the heaviest impact.
Civilians who remain in border and frontline areas in Kharkiv face dire conditions. Many are cut off from access to food, medical care, electricity, and gas. Elderly people are disproportionately affected because they are often unable or reluctant to leave their homes.
And ahead of the weekend's critical Ukraine peace summit, Berlin is hosting the two-day Ukraine recovery conference starting Tuesday. VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gungadze joins us from Berlin with details on what's expected.
This is the third conference, the Ukraine recovery conference. Before we had one, Ukrainians had one in Lugano and another one in London last year. The goal of the conference to reassess the needs of Ukraine, specifically not just in the military needs, but in the reconstruction and delivering food support, humanitarian support, investing in business development of Ukraine, supporting Ukraine to sustain its economy and its human resources, first of all. So this is the third conference like this, and this one is coming in a critical time when Ukraine is needing a lot of support in military support in the east because the fighting is intensified, as we know all, in the last couple of months. But at the same time, Europe is changing. We have seen the European elections where the ultra-right parties gain a lot of seats in the European Parliament. German governing coalition lost. We know similar things happened in France. Emmanuel Macron called the new election. All of these events are connected. And as you said, next week, Ukraine is organizing with Switzerland government peace conference where Ukraine says its goal to look for the opportunity for peace and discuss the issue of peace with the countries that support Ukraine.
Who is attending this recovery conference? Will President Volodymyr Zelensky be there?
We learned today that President Zelensky is coming and he will be speaking in German parliament for the first time, and as well as Olaf Scholz, and the Ukrainians and the Germans are expecting that Ursula von der Leyen will be welcomed to the conference as well. So this is the very high level of discussion supposed to happen at the conference. However, there is a controversy because just today, one of the key deputy minister and acting minister of Ukraine reconstruction, who was supposed to be here representing Ukraine, signed his resignation letter today. The prime minister did not agree to let him come to this conference. And that raised a lot of eyebrows here in Germany that's partnering with this conference.
VOA Eastern Europe Bureau Chief Miroslava Gungadze, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Ukraine said Monday it had struck one of Russia's most advanced warplanes stationed on an air base nearly 600 kilometers from the front lines. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv joins us now for an update. What are you hearing about this?
We're hearing that actually Ukrainian forces are either damaging or destroying a number of targets on the territory of Russia. This includes the warjet, this includes the warship as well, and also other targets in Russia. And this comes along with the information that Ukraine is getting more weapons from its allies, and also that Ukraine is actually getting agreement on using these weapons on the territory of Russia. And according to international experts and according to number of international media outlets, Ukraine is actually using the weapons provided by the West to strike such targets on the territory of Russia. Also, according to Ukrainian officials and Ukrainian military, Ukraine also use its own weapons to attack targets which Ukraine cannot attack with the Western weapons. And this also creates additional, let's say, window of opportunities for Ukrainian forces.
There is obviously still intense fighting. It sounds like there were quite a bit of devastating weekend drone attacks.
Yes, drone and missile attacks continue, fighting continue. And actually, we're talking here about the whole front line. Mainly, we, of course, are concentrating the attention on the eastern part of the country and north. According to the latest update, situation in the Kharkiv region is more or less stable, at least more stable than it used to be weeks ago. More attacks are happening in the Donetsk region. However, attacks in the Kharkiv region, of course, continue. And also, Ukrainian authorities report that certain actions are happening on the border with Sumy region, and this goes in line with what Russian forces did in the Kharkiv region, because as we can see, Russian forces created a certain buffer zone and continue to try to advance within this buffer zone in the Kharkiv region. And accordingly, there is a big fear. Ukrainian officials announced this last week that Russian forces will try to do the same in the Sumy region, just to have this longer line of buffer zone, which will connect Donetsk and Kharkiv and Sumy regions. In the Donetsk region, we get information that Ukrainian forces managed to stabilize the situation in certain areas, and Russian forces managed to enter the first line of the Chasovy Yar village, which is a place of the fierce fighting at this point.
And I know they're hopeful that, you know, the Western military aid will start coming in and they'll be able to ramp up their own defense efforts. But how are Ukrainians reacting and feeling about the EU elections over the weekend?
The results of the elections looks quite positive for Ukraine. The European People's Party, which is very friendly and very pro-Ukrainian oriented, has most of the seats. And according to Ursula von der Leyen, she said that European Parliament will continue this pro-European and pro-Ukrainian work in the upcoming years, which is definitely positive for Ukraine. And it was certain, you know, intimidation whether the elections will go smooth from the Ukrainian point of view in terms of Ukrainian interests. We can see that in some countries, number of parties which do not demonstrate support for Ukraine did not succeed. In some countries, such parties actually had success. So nevertheless, the main result looks positive at this point for Ukraine, and Ukraine hopes that this will definitely increase the support and weapons coming to Ukraine, especially in this upcoming months of summer, which is supposed to be quite active in terms of the battle.
All right. Anna Chernikova reporting to us from Kyiv. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lori.
Meanwhile, the shooting attack against Slovakia's populist prime minister last month has highlighted divisions in Central Europe, a region that has become especially polarized in the wake of Russia's large-scale invasion of Ukraine. John Speer narrates this story from Europe reporter Ricardo Marchina.
For the first time since the attempt on his life, Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico addressed his nation recently in a social media message recorded at his home, where he is recovering after being shot several times. Fico believes the attack was due to his views against supporting Ukraine. Citing public opinion polls, analysts say polarization between those who support Ukraine and those who are on Russia's side in this war has skyrocketed, and not only in the streets of Slovakia, but in societies throughout Central Europe. One report by the Slovak think tank GlobalSec suggests that war fatigue is to blame for decreased sympathy for the Ukrainian cause in these countries. Patrik Sikula is a research fellow at the Center for Democracy and Resilience and is one of the report's co-authors.
What has sort of been happening since 2022 is that some of the initial support is fading. But it was a very high level of support, so that's expected in some countries. For instance, in Poland, compared to 2022, less people see Ukraine's future in the EU, NATO, or both.
With support for the Ukrainian cause declining in Central Europe, Russian propaganda, observers say, is focused on undermining support for the European Union among societies in places like Romania, Slovakia, and Hungary. This is what Dorka Tarkashe, a visiting fellow at the German Marshall Fund, tells VOA from Bucharest.
These disinformation campaigns do not really aim to win the hearts and minds of Eastern Europeans, but to confuse them, to make them believe that the West is not as good.
Analysts say that along with pushing propaganda campaigns on social media, Russia routinely works to infiltrate the institutions of not only Central but Western European countries, as the recent arrests of alleged Russian spies in Germany suggest. Keir Giles is a senior consulting fellow at London's Chatham House.
We've seen what looks like an activation of Russia's programs to push forward the extended arm of its intelligence and security services, potentially to prepare for actual conflict with Europe itself.
From Riga to Bratislava, the formerly communist countries of Eastern and Central Europe, once inside Moscow's sphere of influence, face growing pressure that is straining their societies internally. A pressure that is raising concerns about the future of democracy in the region. For Ricardo Marchina, this is John Speer, VOA News.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Lori London. The Kakhovka Dam in southern Ukraine collapsed on June 6, 2023, flooding hundreds of square kilometers and damaging homes, infrastructure, and the environment. Ukraine blames Russian forces, which occupied the dam. Russia denies that accusation. But as Lizha Bakalets reports, a year later, the impact of the collapse is still being felt.
Residents of Afanasyevka village near the southern Ukrainian city of Mykolaiv say they remember vividly last summer when the Kakhovka dam collapsed and their houses were flooded. The water rose to this level, says Afanasyevka resident Olena Guluk. She points to the line at shoulder level where the remaining wallpaper gives way to bare stone wall. The Kakhovka Dam was destroyed in a blast last June. Russia had occupied the dam on the Dnipro River since the start of the war. After the explosion, water flowed downstream, flooding settlements like Afanasyevka. Guluk filmed that moment. The water rises before your eyes, she says. Fish swim in the garden. The smell is awful. There is nothing to breathe, she adds. Some houses were flooded to the roof for several days. The houses have absorbed a lot of water, so the walls are still wet. Afanasyevka resident Tatiana Fomina says volunteers brought her an industrial dehumidifier. She says she already poured out a bucket of water in the morning, and look, it's already half full. That is how much has collected here again, she adds. Orchids, some clothes and a chair, all that survived from Tatiana's household. She says she renovated the house just before the war. Tatiana Fomina admits she sometimes just sits on the chair and cries. It's so hard to lose everything, she says. She sits and thinks about what she can do next. Apart from the destruction, the village also has a problem with drinking water. After the flooding, the water in the river and residents' wells is polluted. Afanasyevka village head Vasil Homko says the water carried everything, reeds, debris, garbage. Somewhere a gas station was affected and an oil stain came to the village. One house was completely covered in oil, he says. Volunteers have delivered clean water to the village for a year, but only for drinking and cooking. Locals still use the polluted water for bathing and other uses. Homko inspects the level of drinking water in the barrels. He says one is empty, another still has water for one day. He will call tomorrow and ask volunteers to bring more. Many other villages are in the same situation. The Kakhovka Dam collapse flooded more than 600 square kilometers, according to the Ukrainian Ministry of Environment. Yulia Marhel leads the eco-movement Let's Do It Ukraine. She says part of the affected territories is occupied. They cannot study them. Water samples from Ukraine-controlled territories still contain toxic substances and heavy metals, she adds. Also, at least 500,000 hectares of farmland were left without irrigation, the agriculture minister said. And energy production was affected because the dam was a part of hydroelectric power plant. Oleksandr Harchenko, director of the Energy Industry Research Center in Kyiv, says that before the war, Ukraine could survive without one hydropower plant. Now that Russian attacks have destroyed Ukraine's generating capacity elsewhere and the country is left practically without thermal generation, it is a significant loss, he adds. Ukrainian officials say the flooding killed more than 30 people in the Ukrainian-controlled territories. In Afanasyevka, everybody survived. Locals say that's the biggest blessing they could dream of. Lesya Bakalets, VOA News.
Some very talented Ukrainian high school students were among the finalists in this year's Regeneron International Science and Engineering Fair. It's the world's largest global science and engineering competition for 9th to 12th grade students. I had a chance to speak with the three Ukrainian students who were chosen to come to the United States last month and to hear more about their projects and the thrill of receiving this opportunity. Volodymyr Borisenko is one of the three Ukrainian high school seniors who recently had the opportunity to spend a week in the United States and present his project at the fair.
My project called Simulation of Armed Conflicts with the Application of Unmanned Aerial Vehicles in Ground Combat Operation. The problem is there is more than 50 armed conflicts in the world, and especially in Ukraine, there is the first time a robotics conflict.
Finishing his last year of grade school in his hometown of Cherkasy, while his country is under siege, inspired Borisenko to use his scientific skills on a project that focused on technical advances that can save lives in modern warfare.
I developed for the first time the equation that incorporates the factor of robotics. I created the program that can describe the behavior of troops on the landscape, and it can apply to minimize the losses among the military.
Polina Yarufa, a high school senior from Kyiv, won the chance to compete for her work on software that can model and predict wildfire emissions. Her mother's chronic asthma was part of her inspiration to support public health efforts as wildfire events continue to increase.
I read a lot of information by WHO, and they said that the level of wildfires increased in 3 times. And also it's actual for Ukraine now because we have a lot of rocket attacks. Also it's actual in 2022. The level of wildfires increase.
And as for having the opportunity to come to the U.S. to present her work and participate in this event.
Very cool, because now I have some opportunities to present my project for all the world and also help a lot of people to preserve their health.
Arufa now hopes to continue improving on her software.
And to know how I can present it for other countries and for other people to make it global. Because it's a problem not only for Ukraine, but all over the world.
And Ukrainian high school student Bohdan Havlotsky decided to use his scientific skills to work on ways to improve the cost-sensitive construction of stable platforms for ambulances.
I have discovered a significant problem that can lead to irreplaceable human losses among civilians and military people. That is why I have found a solution for it that requires a practical and easy-to-use decision.
And while life in a war zone can take a toll on anyone, it can be especially challenging for high school students like these three who are looking past the current situation and ahead to their future.
We are trying our best to stay focused, to stay creative. Thanks to the support of our schools, our universities, and our parents, we decide to fight and we decide to push forward. As for me, I became even more motivated in helping people and doing my work even more effectively.
That was a conversation with the three Ukrainian high school seniors here in the U.S. presenting their ambitious science projects as finalists in this year's Regeneron International Science and Engineering Fair. And finally, today, after Russia invaded Ukraine, the West responded, sending military weaponry and aid to the embattled nation. But as the war drags on, there is also a need for doctors. Irina Solomko has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Military surgeon Vitaly Panchenko normally operates at Lviv Military Hospital, but on this day, he is getting additional training in specialty aesthetic surgery in New York City.
Today, we did facial reconstruction surgery. We took a nerve from the right lower limb and moved it to the patient's face.
Panchenko says Russia's invasion of Ukraine has created new challenges for doctors.
Since 2022, we have had many patients in grave condition who needed extremely complex reconstructive surgeries.
Panchenko and fellow military surgeon Mykola Sinyuk are in New York during an internship in the United States that trains Ukrainian doctors for complex surgeries. The first stop was the University of Oklahoma.
In Oklahoma, we did head and neck oncology surgery. These are long surgeries that can take up to 12 hours to perform.
A nonprofit Ukrainian-American human rights organization called Razem organized the internship. The program began at the University of Oklahoma in 2023, says Razem's Yulia Shama.
They are the first ones who granted our doctors temporary licenses. Our surgeons could enter operating rooms and assist. Last year, we supported 7 internships. This year, we have already supported 7 internships.
Shama says the internship grew out of a Razem program that sent American surgeons to Ukraine to operate on war wounded.
We already work with several medical groups that have decided to regularly travel to Ukraine, so these are not one-time visits.
Plastic surgeon Bruce Moskowitz was among them. While in Ukraine, he, together with Panchenko and the team, restored a wounded man's nose.
There was a patient with a blast injury who lost the entire nose, broke both eye sockets and the orbits which hold the nose in the bridge. I was involved with reconstructing the mid-face, a very complicated multiple-step operation.
On top of operating, Moskowitz also raises funds to buy medical equipment for Ukrainian colleagues. He says he has already managed to collect $400,000.
And part of the funds that we raised during the fundraiser was to buy equipment. Microscopes, surgical microscopes. They're expensive, $75,000, $100,000
apiece. Panchenko and Sinyuk say they gained invaluable experience while in the U.S., and hope it will allow them to help more wounded people return to a normal life. For Irina Solomko in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you very much for listening. Until next time,
I'm Lori London.